Support comes from the Arizona Inn, a Four Diamond, family-owned historic resort hotel and restaurant on Elm Street near the U of A. Information is at arizonainn.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jim Ninsel. I'm the executive editor of the Tucson Weekly Inside Tucson Business and our other Tucson local media publications. And I'm also your host here on KXCI for Zona Politics with Jim Ninsel. We are talking today with Terry Goddard, the former attorney general of the state of Arizona, who has launched an initiative drive to see if he can ban what he calls dirty money, what a lot of people call dark money. But before we get to Mr. Goddard, we're going to talk with Hank Stevenson from the Yellow Sheets. He's the editor of the Yellow Sheets up in Phoenix. And Hank, I've asked you this before, but for our listeners who may not be aware of what Yellow Sheets are, you cover the Arizona legislature.
We cover the legislature, state politics. It's kind of a insider gossip rag, subscription only, but there are bootleg copies that float around, I hear.
And you are keeping track of what's happening up there. And this week, we had the resignation of David Stringer, a Republican from Prescott. And let's talk a little bit about what's going on there.
Yeah, that was the big news of the week. David Stringer, Republican from Prescott, who has been dogged by his own past mostly. There were some racist comments that he made in the last 6 months or so, but kind of went on to win re-election. And then the New Times dropped a bombshell story pointing out that he had been charged with several sex crimes back in the early 80s when he was living in D.C., that sparked an ethics investigation into not only the alleged sex crimes, but also the racist comments. And it seemed like it was just scooping up any complaints that people had about the lawmaker. He had gone to court to try to get the ethics committee to stop subpoenaing him, essentially. He didn't want to turn over some documents. And when it turned out that he was going to have to or face the consequences, he just very quietly resigned, a kind of one line letter of resignation.
And up at the legislature right now, you've got a margin of 31 Republicans. Well, now 30 Republicans and 29 Democrats. And any bit of legislation needs 31 votes to pass. So at the moment, unless Republicans can draw a Democrat over to vote for one of their bills, things can't really get passed at the Arizona legislature and the House of Representatives.
Yeah, Stringer resigned Wednesday afternoon, and Thursday there was a whole bunch of action scheduled for the House floor. There were several debates on some higher profile bills, a lot of votes scheduled, and they just ended up calling everything off. The Democrats right now, if they don't want something to pass, it won't pass. And I think that legislation, at least anything controversial, will just come to a standstill until they can get Stringer replaced. That should happen quickly. It sounds like the Yavapai County Board of Supervisors will be meeting next Wednesday to pick a new lawmaker to represent that area. Smart money's on Steve Pierce. He's a former Senate president, a longtime lawmaker who has reluctantly agreed to come back to the Capitol and hold down the fort until the next election and not seek the seat after that.
And just for our readers, so our listeners understand what's going on up there, this is basically the legislature starts in January and it wraps up sometime around May, but it's supposed to go for 100 days, often goes longer. Rarely goes shorter. But at this point, I think all of the bills have basically been through the committee process and passed one chamber, and they've moved over to the other chamber and have made it through the committee process in the opposite chamber at this point. So we're kind of almost getting close to the end game up there, right?
We would be getting close to the end game, except for there's been no word on the budget in several months. People are talking about a session that may last into June at this point. As you said, like, the committee process is over, so all that's left for them to do is vote on the bills that have cleared their chamber of origin and gotten through the committees in the second chamber, kind of those final votes, and maybe some conference committees to hash out the differences and the versions of the bill But they should be wrapping up here pretty shortly, except for the Republicans have been fighting with Governor Doug Ducey about how we're going to conform our state tax code to match with the federal changes that came through under President Trump's tax cuts. And they just can't agree. Essentially, it's a very complicated issue, but House and Senate Republicans want to give that money back as tax cuts, whereas the governor wants to hold on to that money, put it in the rainy day fund, kind of talk about tax cuts maybe next year after we know exactly how much money the state will see in this windfall.
Right, because I think no one's really sure exactly how much money we're talking about here, because basically there was an obvious big change in the federal tax law, and that affected the way people can make deductions. And as a result, folks in Arizona may face a higher state tax bill. But each of those tax bills varies from person to person, and it's kind of hard to actually nail down what they would have paid in an alternate universe.
Yeah, there's some estimates. You know, kind of the middle-ish figure is about $200 million they're estimating, but who knows? It could be, you know, significantly higher or lower than that.
And figuring out how exactly to return that money to the taxpayers is also sort of a guessing game of averaging and hoping you kind of get it right. You know, as long as we're talking about what's going on up in state politics, there is one bill up at the legislature that would strike a lot of potential voters from what's called the permanent early voting list. That's the list you put your name on if you want to get that early ballot in the mail. Some people get the early ballot but then don't send it back, and this would basically clear their names off of that list so they would not receive early ballot in the future.
Yeah, it'll be called the temporary early voting list. Now, that's not actually in the law, but that's the spirit of the law.
From Pevel to Tevel.
Tevel, yes, the Tevel. We'll all have to get used to writing Tevel. Basically, if you don't use it, you lose it. So as it is now, you sign up to be on the permanent early voting list, and every election, a ballot comes to you in the mail, even if you don't fill it out and return it. The next election, a new ballot will come to you. And this one, if you sit out two election cycles, I should say, both the primary and the general election. So essentially, if you vote every 4 years once for president and you miss one of those presidential cycles, you will no longer receive a ballot in the mail. And it looks like about 200,000 people would be impacted by this legislation, knocked off the Pevel. And you can still reapply for the Pevel, sign up again, or go and vote in person. But that convenience of having the permanent early voting list where a ballot just shows up to your door, that would be lost.
And where is this bill in the process at this point?
This one's working its way through. It's waiting on a final vote before it heads over to Governor Doug Ducey.
This is a final vote in the House or in the Senate?
In the House.
Okay, so this is one of those ones that may be held up as they seek to replace Stringer. And if you're just tuning in, you are listening to Zona Politics with Jim Ninsel. I'm talking with Hank Stevenson, the editor of the Yellow Sheet Report in Phoenix. And Hank, you're also following some legal action. The state's high court heard a case last week about concentrates, marijuana concentrates. Is whole question of whether or not when folks legalized weed for medicinal purposes, whether they also allowed the dispensaries and the producers of the medicine to develop concentrates from that, which basically are marijuana extracts that then are smoked or used in baking or what have you. And the Yavapai County Attorney, Sheila Polk, prosecuted somebody saying that they did not, that the voters did not legalize this, that this is a different form of marijuana covered elsewhere in the state's laws. And this case has made its way up to the Supreme Court. I'm sure the dispensaries are eagerly waiting to see what happens with this. And so much of the business has moved into these concentrates. But talk a little bit about what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, medical marijuana is no longer a bag of pot. It's brownies, it's gummies, it's lollipops, it's THC patches, it's vape pens or wax or hashish. And hashish is what Rodney Jones got busted with up in Yavapai County. He had about a thimble full of hashish. Ended up going to jail for 2.5 years for this as his case has worked its way through the courts. Yavapai County Attorney's Office, Sheila Polk, was a huge opponent of the legalization efforts on the last election. She was kind of the spearhead of the no campaign against legalization and has been taking this case through the court system successfully. She got a superior court judge to agree with her that concentrates, edibles, extracts, basically anything that is not the flower bud of the marijuana plant is illegal because it's not covered under the Arizona Medical Marijuana Act, even if you have a medical marijuana card, as Rodney Jones did. That went before the Supreme Court recently. They had oral arguments. And a lot of kind of court watchers who are usually pretty hesitant to predict what the court is going to do watched that and said, well, it didn't go well for Yavapai County. Some of the justices were asking, so you're expecting 3-year-olds who have seizures and use marijuana as medicine to roll up joints and puff them, as opposed to, the tinctures that they give to children like that. Another justice asked if I take the bud of the plant and rub it between my hands and get some, kind of gunk on my hands, have I just broken the law? And the Yavapai County attorney was forced to say, yeah, I think he did, which, just kind of it sounds insane. And I think that was the point that the justice was making. So never try to predict a court, but this one didn't seem to go well just based on oral arguments. And it's worth noting that other Superior Court judges have taken cases like this and shot them down. It's just in Yavapai County that this has managed to prevail to the point of making it up to the Supreme Court. And, extracts, edibles, et cetera, are about 40% of the business for a lot of dispensaries. So this is not only, people's lives on the line being charged with felonies, but big business as well.
All right, we are going to have to leave it there. I want to thank Hank Stevenson from the Yellow Sheet Reports for coming and filling us in on some of what's happening. I'm Jim Nintzel. I'm your host for Zona Politics. We're going to be right back with Terry Goddard to talk about his latest effort to outlaw dirty money. We'll find out what that's all about. Stay tuned.
Zona Politics is made possible with the generous support of the Loft Cinema, Tucson's independent movie theater. The Loft features independent, foreign, and documentary films, cult classics, discussions with filmmakers, and much more, including the Loft Film Fest in November. The Loft is located at 3233 East Speedway Boulevard. Showtimes can be found at loftcinema.org.
And we're back with Zona Politics. Joining me now is Terry Goddard, who served as Arizona's Attorney General from 2002 to 2010. This week, Mr. Goddard launched the Outlaw Dirty Money Initiative drive, which seeks to ban large anonymous contributions to campaigns in Arizona. Terry, welcome to Zona Politics.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be back. And yes, we launched. We're back in the full. What should I say? The full race. We're getting signatures.
Well, first of all, for those who don't know what this is about, and you're calling it dirty money in this campaign, it's also been called dark money in journalism and in politics. And I think campaign finance is not something our average voter knows a great deal about. So explain what you're talking about when you say dirty money.
Well, we're trying to cut to the chase because what we're talking about is anonymous contributions. In other words, somebody who puts money, and in most cases we're talking about substantial amounts of money, millions of dollars, into advertisements for or against a candidate, but they don't want anybody to know who they are. So they use a number of legal tricks to try to avoid disclosure. And so that's why we call it dark. I call it dirty because I think it pollutes our system. It means that when you see those ads and that has some kind of innocuous name down at the bottom, like Citizens for a Better Everything, you have no idea what the real motive was, why it is being put on the air, why it's trying to get candidate X either elected or defeated. And because of that ignorance, because you can't evaluate the source, voters don't have any real idea why they're being persuaded one way or the other. And that's the actual legal title of our initiative is Voters' Right to Know. We believe Arizona voters have the right to know the source of the funding for the ads that they're seeing on television and on the web and throughout the broadcast media.
And I don't want to get too deep into the weeds here, but this is something that really became a major issue in the wake of the Supreme Court Citizens United decision.
Yeah, it did, but it's interesting. It's an indirect relationship to Citizens United. Citizens United said that corporations are people and that money is speech, and that revolutionized funding for politics, for campaigns, because all of a sudden corporate treasuries were opened up. And they started putting millions of dollars. They actually increased the cost of running here in Arizona by about five times. If you could run for, let's say, $100,000 for office before Citizens United, afterward it was closer to $500,000. And that was across the board. I was a candidate in those days, and I saw it happen. And so by releasing the corporate treasuries, however, they basically opened a door for major money, but major money from entities that didn't want to be disclosed. In other words, most corporations have customers. Most corporations have shareholders. Many corporations have regulators, all of whom probably have different views on certain political issues. And so all of a sudden, these corporations had millions of dollars to spend, but they really didn't want anybody to know that they were spending it. So what happened was dark money. What happened was that they used various legal tricks to try to hide the fact that they were engaged in a particular campaign so their regulators, their customers, their shareholders wouldn't know what they were doing. And oh, by the way, in some cases, if it was really obvious that a particular interest was supporting a particular candidate, that person was going to lose votes, not gain them. So they didn't want to poison the well at the same time. So you've got a situation where lots of money unleashed by Citizens United, who, by the way, specifically said that the antidote for major new money, which they knew they were unleashing, would be full disclosure. Justice Kennedy's decision says nothing should get in the way of the voter's right to know. Nothing should get away in the way of being able to evaluate the source of an ad through full disclosure. And just a year ago, Justice Kennedy, before he retired from the court, said that he was very disappointed to see how poor the disclosure rules were around the country. And here in Arizona, we have the worst ever. I mean, we basically, if you're, our legislature's bent over backwards to try to make sure that hidden money stays hidden.
And is the funding, for example, that APS did with the Corporation Commission an example of what you're talking about here?
Absolutely. What APS is alleged to have done, and let me make it clear, under the state of the law in 2014, they didn't do anything illegal if, in fact, they put millions of dollars into trying to elect a couple of candidates to the Arizona Corporation Commission. They've never admitted or denied that they were involved, which in the criminal prosecution context that I've been involved in usually means they did it, but they're not going to say so.
And they did fess up to it in subsequent years.
They fessed up to it in other I give them credit for that. They also played very heavily in the 2016 election and actually put their name, Pinnacle West, on the ads. So we don't know about 2014. If the outlawed dirty money proposition had been passed by the voters, had gotten on the ballot and gotten passed, they wouldn't have been able to do that. In other words, anybody who gives over $5,000 to elect or defeat a candidate through third parties has to say who they are, has to say their original source, not just the meaningless name of some corporation that's there to hide the ball. They have to. It's the person that actually earned the money, or the corporation that actually earned the money, has to be disclosed.
So
that's
how
the whole purpose.
Yeah. So how would the law work? And again, we don't want to get into the weeds, but give
no,
us
no,
the,
please.
Give us the basics of what would happen here.
The basics are basically if and this doesn't apply to candidate elections. You already have to disclose if you. if you or I give $50 or more to a candidate, we have to give our name, our address, and who our employer is. But the big exception, the huge loophole in Arizona disclosure statutes is for these 501c4 corporations, which are nonprofits technically. They are organized under the IRS code 501c4, and they don't have to disclose their donors. And in Arizona, our legislature has taken the position that we're not going to require, they can be involved in our campaigns, they can be involved in trying to influence elections, but they don't even have to declare that they're here. They don't have to have a chairman. They don't have to register with the Secretary of State the way other campaigns do. And the only requirement is they be in good standing with the IRS, and nobody knows what that means. I guess it means you're not under indictment at the moment for tax fraud. But the bottom line is you don't have, if you're one of these dark money organizations, you just don't have to register anything in the state of Arizona. And I believe that's wrong. I think everybody needs to fess up and be responsible for the thoughts that they put out into the public arena, and there should be no exceptions.
And what would the penalties be?
Sorry, the penalty is to be determined by a court, of course. But if somebody has not disclosed the original source and they've spent the money and haven't gone through the disclosure requirements, which are that they put the original source, so all the major contributions, that means over $5,000 contributions that went into their expenditure, they have to disclose those original sources. And it may be buried way deep in the weeds, but they need to find out and they need to make a clean breast of it. The penalty would be the amount of the undisclosed or improperly disclosed funds up to 3 times that amount. So it could be a major, major fine. It has to be imposed by either the Clean Elections Commission, who would be the administrator of this program, or a court. And so it's not arbitrary. It would be subject to a hearing, but it would be a major fine.
And I'm sure you've heard from the other side on this, but critics say it's important to allow anonymous contributions, because otherwise people will be making contributions and they may face harassment. Or they say that some of the founding fathers embraced anonymity in their political activities, and it's a long American tradition to participate in politics anonymously. I want you to address that argument.
Well, thank you for summarizing all the bogus arguments that I've been hearing. First one is that it might be threatened or you might face physical harm. We've got a specific provision because we're sensitive to that. We basically said if somebody believes that they or their family are going to have a serious risk of harm, they can petition the Clean Elections Commission that their name not be disclosed. And that we took that very seriously. The other items, though, is there's no right to hide in the American Constitution. This is not the same as free speech. We all have the right to speak freely, and we have the right to speak anonymously if we want to. But we don't have the right to buy millions of dollars in advertising and then not take responsibility for what we are saying. So there's a big difference between just speech and speech through a huge microphone. And that's what these billionaires have, and that's what they want to protect. So you and I, as I said, if we give to a candidate, if we give to a proposition, we have to disclose if it's $50 or more. That's not new. That's not history making or trend setting. That's the way it's always been. But the big exception are these billionaires who use these legal hiding places to avoid any kind of disclosure of their involvement with particular advertisements. And one of the results of that secretiveness is that presumably these rich people and these rich corporations have reputations. They have risk if they say something that's defamatory or that's just wrong. When you do it this way, when you hide the contributor, that reputation is never at risk because nobody knows that they're involved. There's some third party who's usually a well-paid hack who does everything they can to try to either build up a candidate or tear one down. And most of it's tearing down. Most of the negative ads that we see these days, the very worst ones, are sponsored by anonymous funds.
And this is your second run at this. The initiative did not make the ballot in 2018. What happened to knock it off the ballot?
Well, that is a sad story. We had 285,000 signatures legally gathered, and I believe almost all of them were absolutely positively good. The court, the Secretary of State agreed with us. They basically felt that we had enough, with a little nudging from the trial court, who put 6,000 that the Secretary of State had taken off, put back in. And then the Agarwani group, Americans for Prosperity, brought some lawyers and actually checked every single signature in our petitions. The Secretary of State only checks one signature. One in 20, 5%. But these guys went to the time and expense to check every one. And the main thing that they went after was a statute that was passed in Arizona, I think deliberately to keep petitions from getting certified, which basically said that if you were a paid petition passer, you were out of state, you had to file with the Secretary of State a service process address. And if you were subpoenaed at that address and didn't show up to the hearing, all of the signatures that you gathered were declared null and void. Well, I think that's an atrocious law because we have a right as Arizonans. We have a constitutional right to petition our government. But here the law said that just to make somebody show up at trial, the penalty would be not against that person and not against the organization, really, except indirectly. It would be against the individual whose rights were being violated. It would be against the citizen who signed the petition. Well, they then, our opposition, not only invoked that statute, but they did subpoena, I think, 14 of our circulators. But they never told us they were doing that. And so the first we heard about it, that they'd actually served the subpoenas or tried to, was when the hearing was in the middle. We were in the middle of the hearing challenging our signatures. And so they started calling these witnesses. Well, the witnesses weren't coming because they didn't know. The reason they didn't know is the subpoenas were served on the weekend in the building that the employer of these folks used to be in but had left 2 months before, and they were served on a security guard. Now, that's ridiculous. If you have any interest in actually getting somebody to testify, obviously you're not going to do it that way. Because they did it at the last minute and didn't tell us, we never even got to put the security guard on trial. We wouldn't put him on trial. We would have questioned him about how this was done and whether he had the authority to accept the subpoena, but we never had that chance. So that was the way that we lost the last few signatures that kept us off the ballot.
And you have...
I think it's a terrible story, and one that our circulators, our volunteers, are justifiably furious about.
And you have to collect how many signatures by when in order to get this on the ballot?
Okay, thank you. The nuts and bolts. The number went up because so many people voted in the 2018 election. I thought it was a great thing that we had such a big turnout, but what that does is it automatically adjusts the number of the signatures that you need. It's based on the total number of votes for governor in the prior election. So we have to have 357,000 good signatures. That's more than anybody's ever gotten before to get a constitutional amendment on the ballot. And I say good signatures, so you need more than that to actually, you know, have the insurance to make sure that you've got enough. And it has to be done by the 2nd of July of 2020.
And if folks want to learn more about this effort, they can go to what website?
OutlawDirtyMoney.com. OutlawDirtyMoney.com is our website. We also have a Facebook page by the same name, Outlaw Dirty Money. And I hope folks will join up because this is going to be all volunteer. I think we learned a sad lesson that the Supreme Court's not going to let us use paid petition passers in the future, even if we had the money, and we don't. So basically, this is going to be something where the citizens of Arizona, if they want it, they're going to have to spend a little time getting their friends and neighbors to sign a petition. And my job is to make it as easy as possible to find those petitions and pass them or sign them.
And I didn't want to let you go today without talking a little bit about Don Diamond, the legendary local developer and land speculator who passed away in Tucson this week. And you knew Don Diamond.
I did, and legendary is a good way to describe him, a giant, a man of great principle, very generous in many ways, and I knew him mostly, obviously, in the political context. I think I can say as a strong Republican, Don was never a supporter of mine, although he was very cordial, and he was always ready to talk about issues involving the state of Arizona, and I commend him for that. And also, when we started last time to take on dark money, to take on what I believe is really a corrupt, insidious practice in American politics, Don was one of our most generous contributors. And I think that showed what a nonpartisan effort we were undertaking. It also showed the breadth of his involvement. I mean, it wasn't just he was a huge supporter of John McCain. He was a huge supporter of many, many good candidates, but he also looked beyond that and saw problems of the system, problems that he thought maybe could be fixed, and he was supportive of those efforts. So I can't express enough the kind of loss that Arizona suffered because Don Diamond's no longer among us. He helped to make Arizona great.
All right, we are going to have to leave it there. We've been talking with Terry Goddard, the former Attorney General of Arizona, who's now working on the Outlaw Dark Money Initiative. And I appreciate that. That is our show for today. Please tune in to Zona Politics next week. I'm Jim Ninsel, and we'll see you then.